Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Curl Bro, and I support Gen X Grown Up on Patreon, and you should too. And if you don't, I hope you leave enough room for my fists, because I'm going to ram it in your stomach and break your spine. Just go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon to sign up today.
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up. Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listeners, to this, the backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, of course, is George. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Not a show without Mo. How you doing, Mo?
Doing good, man.
In this episode, you know, photorealism in video games is commonplace now, but for decades, storage and technology limitations meant blocky figures were about the best we could get. But as the tech evolved, the use of actual video started to enhance the game experience. So in this backtrack, we look back at the rise and legacy of FMV, full motion video games. And George is chomping at the bit. He's done the bulk of the research for this episode because it's one of his favorite types of games. And in fact, he recommended this backtrack. So we're going to get into all of that in just a couple of minutes. But first, it's time for the fourth listener email. And our fourth listener this time around is Michael P. Now, this email is just for me. You guys will remember this, I'm sure, but it's just for me. So
all right.
The subject line of Michael's email is, "Better give me all your gauze, nurse, because my mind was blown."
Okay.
Michael says, you'll catch up quickly. He says, "I discovered the top 10 Weird Al parody podcast this week."
Years ago.
Okay.
Weird Al was one of my favorite people/artists/accordion virtuosos of all time. I loved hearing the final ranking, and I think the point system was exciting, which George devised. Well done, George. Yep. Thanks for the great content. Thank you, Michael. We appreciate that you like that. George is to thank for the point system. He always set that up for us. He goes on to say, "While I'm here, let me add that this week also marks the start of my new life." That's right. From the mid-80s until now, I've lived my life in a world in which Gosners, or was it Gosners? Gosters, maybe, existed as an important tool/device/implement for medical procedures. Is this ringing a bell with you guys at all?
Not me. Mm-hmm.
I had a misunderstood lyric that I always thought Weird Al said, "Better give me all your Gosners, this patient's fading fat." And then I learned much later it was gauze, comma, nurse. I thought it was a word, Gosners, right? And we talked about that in this backtrack. I remembered it because it was my story. Otherwise, I understand why you guys wouldn't. Michael had the same experience. He also thought it was something called Gosners and just made it up. So now he says, "That was the old me, though. Thanks to you and your podcast, the new me now exists in a world in which Dr. Yankovic was actually requesting the entire supply of thin, translucent fabric with a loose open weave that the trained medical professional assisting him in the surgical procedure had on hand." I guess this explains why in all the episodes of ER and Chicago Hope that I watched, no one ever asked for any Gosners.
That's funny. That is great.
I was so excited to hear I wasn't the only one on the planet that misunderstood that lyric for decades. And Michael, you and I, we're together now. We now know it's not called Gosners. And in fact, his sign-off for his email, former fellow Gosnerite, Mike.
Are you ever not a Gosnerite?
I think for all your life, you will be it's like coming out of a 12-step program. You're always whatever it was you were rehabilitating from. You're just recovering from it. So you are recovering Gosnerite.
He's recovering Gosnerite.
What's the old joke? Save 12,000 people, but one.
Oh, my.
You might
Thank you, Michael.
That.
I might. But the people that are listening for the Tuesday edit, they heard you say it.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be the funny. Yeah, maybe. If I bloop it, if I go boop. Michael, thank you so much for your email. Welcome to the club of former Gosnerites. We love it that you took the time to write in. We love it these old episodes are still being heard and found and enjoyed. Listener, if you would like to have your email featured here on the show, you know it's drop dead easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one, and most of them, like Mike's, will eventually make the show. All right. With that good business behind us, it's time to jump into the body of this FMV backtrack right after this quick break.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
This token can unlock a fantasy you'll never forget. With this token, you can live a dream and be what you want to be in the game room at Connecticut Golfland. With the drop of this token, you can travel the universe, race the Grand Prix, or play for the New York Yankees. You can live out your fantasies in the game room at Connecticut Golfland. A cup of tokens can provide you with hours of fun and excitement. Live out your fantasies at Connecticut Golfland, Route 83, Vernon.
In this backtrack, we're talking about the full motion video games, often called FMV. We kind of described that at the top of the show. So to get us started, I have the definition here. Full motion video, or FMV, is a video game narration technique that relies upon pre-recorded video files rather than sprites, vectors, or 3D models to display the action in a game. And that is about the extent of my knowledge of the history of FMV.
Mine too. So yeah, I'm no help.
Here you go. Fortunately, not only is this type of game among George's favorites, but he also was generous enough to do a tremendous amount of research and learned a lot that even he didn't know about it. So George, why don't you kick us off about what you discovered about FMV?
Sure. Well, I mean, might as well start off with some factoids and things. So If I asked you guys, what is the first FMV video game that you can remember, what would your answer be?
Dragon's Lair.
Earliest? Dragon's Lair. Yeah, I would think. Right. Yeah, early on.
That's probably 95% of the video game playing audience from that era would say Dragon's Lair was the first FMV game. Unfortunately, it wasn't. A lot of people also go, oh no, Sega came out with Astron Belt just before Dragon's Lair. Well, that's also not the very first one. There's another small community that says, wait a minute, in 1981 or 1982, there was a game released called Quarter Horse, which was basically video of horses racing around a track that you could bet on in a video game format.
Oh, cool. Oh,
that sounds pretty cool.
Still not the first true iteration of an FM video game. FMV video games actually took place in 1974.
No. 74?
Yes. Yes. And the very first one was created by Nintendo, not Nintendo of America, Nintendo Japan proper. It was released in America by Sega.
All the heavy hitters.
Believe it or not, they collabed back then.
What the hell?
And it was called Wild Gunman. Now, we call it Wild Gunman 1974 because there was a Wild Gunman that was made by Nintendo for the NES later on. There was also the Wild Gunman fake video game that was in Back to the Future 2, which was never a real game.
Oh.
Right?
I drain a bell. I wonder if they got the idea from this one or something. Maybe. I don't know.
It's kind of an homage thing people are talking about, but Wild Gunman 1974 was the first FMV arcade game. And let me explain what it is. Yeah. Because we didn't have laser discs, which is what everybody associates most closely with FMV video games in that era.
Yeah.
These were actually on reels and projected onto a screen. They were full, like, filmed scenes of a gunfight. And here's the great thing. I just want to explain this technology because, to me, this is one of the most interesting things I learned doing my research. There were actually two projectors in the system. So you guys ever played like the Duck Hunt thing that was in the arcades that we were shooting skeet on the screen?
Right.
All right. Imagine that same kind of a big box with your guns way back from the screen.
Okay.
The projectors were in that big box that your guns were attached to. the two projectors would spin and go at the same time that you started the game, right? But right. only one projector was being displayed on the screen.
Okay.
If you shot at the wrong time and you were dead, that first projector just kept going and said, oh, you're dead.
Oh, the bulbs would go on and off.
Exactly.
Like a real-time
if
cut.
If you shot
Holy
at the
crap.
Correct time, it would immediately sync to the other projector's video, and that projector would show the scene as you beat the adversary.
That's kind of genius.
That's pretty clever.
Completely yeah. genius, because otherwise, what would you have had to do? If you got one thing or another, you would have had to wind or rewind
right.
the
and nobody,
video
nobody's
file
there to do
further
that.
Or back in right. the projector. It's yeah. going to break the reel instantly. So yeah, it was a two-projector system. Wild Gunman, they did four other reel-based arcade games that were all released by Nintendo from 74 to 78. Those are the first true FMV video games. Wow. Enough of that. Now let's move into the modern era. I talked about right. Quarter Horse a second ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That actually is the first version of what we think of as a Laserdisc style arcade game.
And that was the one where they're betting on the race, you said, the Quarter Horse
they're
one?
They're betting on a race. So it's just horses running around a track like you might watch the Kentucky Derby today.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have some little sprites on the screen, like to show you the number one horse, the number three horse and stuff.
Oh,
above
like overlays. Yep.
Yeah. But that was the actual first game that was an FMV.
Okay.
That's in 81 or 82. It's kind of hard. I've seen dates on that for different releases. But it was also the very first game that had dual monitors.
Mm.
There were two. There was the screen that was
really?
Down below, and then there's a screen up above. The screen up above displayed the betting matrix. The screen down below displayed the race.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting.
They probably didn't have an easy way to overlay them together seamlessly, so just put on two screens. Okay.
Exactly. It's not the same that we thought of with FMV games having two monitors. Dragon's Lair had that because people wanted to watch the action.
Watch.
There were such big crowds around the game that they had to put the second monitor up there. Anyway, in 1983, we got that Astron belt from Sega, and we got Dragon's Lair from Cinematronics.
Okay.
Yep.
Now,
we're only off by like 9 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a decade, though. We were so close.
Yeah.
Now, these were all based on the Laserdisc systems that were born out of, I think that was in the 1972. Yeah, 72 was in MCA and Philips first demonstrated publicly Laserdisc. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Then that technology sat around and didn't do anything up until this time frame. The interesting thing, John, for us about Astron Belt, it actually used clips from Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
Really?
And from Battle Beyond the Stars, those two sci-fi movies from the 80s.
Oh, so probably just like the outer space flying scenes, I'm guessing. No, like actors
I'm
or anything.
I'm guessing.
Right?
I haven't seen that
That's
game.
That's interesting.
But yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting that they got away with it, if you ask me.
Yeah, really.
What if they licensed it? Or are they just like, nobody will notice? It's just a video game.
You know, who knows? We also got other games coming around like that. So we got games like Bega's Battle, Cliffhanger, and Firefox, which all reused footage. Firefox, obviously, from
Firefox.
The movie, right?
Clint Eastwood movie.
Mm-hmm.
While other games like Space Ace, Time Gal, Thayer's Quest, Super Don Quixote, and Cobra Command were all original footage, animated footage that was created for the game.
That's all the Don Bluth stuff, that beautiful animation stuff. Most of it, anyway. Oh, is it?
Okay. Don Bluth didn't do all of these. Don Bluth actually only did two games on our list.
Oh, really? Okay.
He did more.
Yeah.
So you said Cliffhanger. You brought up Cliffhanger before. You said that also reused footage?
Cliffhanger did reuse footage. Yes. It reused footage from a Japan anime series.
Oh.
There was like two or three episodes that were clipped and spliced together to make the story for Cliffhanger.
I'll be damned.
Interesting. Yeah.
During that same time, because this was supposedly becoming popular thanks to Dragon's Lair hitting the scene and going and doing as well as it was, Atari started working on titles for Battlestar Galactica, Knight Rider, and Roadrunner.
Roadrunner. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay. I don't remember these.
Did they come out?
Because they were never released.
Oh, okay.
All right. I was like, I missed an entire.
They were just working on them.
I missed an entire Battlestar Galactica full motion video game.
I mean, wouldn't that have been awesome though?
I know. And Knight Rider.
There is a lot of these. You can find them on YouTube. People have found their video files and uploaded the entire content of the discs.
That's cool.
So you can look at some of these. Even though they weren't released, people got a hold of them. Midway, they were actually working on Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and NFL football. Most of them didn't make it to the arcades.
Yeah. Oh, damn it.
We need to talk a little bit kind of about the big players in the space, though. So the first one really we need to talk about is Cinematronics. That's the company who put out Dragon's Lair, Space Ace, Dragon's Lair 2. Yep. They started, and in 1982 or 83, they started a partnership with a company called Advanced Microsystems, or AMS. And AMS convinced Cinematronics make these LaserDisc games, because they had just produced a game called Zizix that wasn't very popular, didn't do that well in the arcades. And both companies were hurting for cash. But Rick Dyer, who was the president of Advanced Microsystems, which later became RDI, if you guys remember those titles, RDI, that company that built games back in the 80s, they also built some systems that we'll talk about later. He was the guy who was really the driving force behind LaserDisc games at Cinematronics and Advanced Microsystems.
Okay.
He reached out to Don Bluth, who was a disgruntled ex-Disney employee.
I'd heard
just
that.
Come off of making The Secret of NIMH, which was, even though it was a critical success and a cult favorite, it was a financial failure. His company was about to go bankrupt after that film came out. So he got Don Bluth and his animators to come on board with Cinematronics to produce the hardware, and they all worked together to produce Dragon's Lair.
Okay.
Now, we talked a little bit earlier about the Astron Belt game from Sega, right? Astron Belt was actually due to come out in 1982, the year before Dragon's Lair came out.
Oh, really?
It didn't, though, because they had too many technical problems. However,
it's new.
Even though they had all these bugs and glitches, they made one big mistake. They displayed their device at the Amusement and Music Operators of America trade show
in
1982.
Okay.
What a good idea. We could do that.
It was a leading industry event in the U.S. back in the 80s. It merged with the Amusement Showcase International and later on became the American Coin Machine Exposition, or ACME. So for anybody who's a trade show enthusiast, it ended up becoming ACME.
Okay.
Now, Rick Dyer has been quoted in some articles, and I've found this moderately interesting and fascinating, but he said it was Sega's big mistake to debut their system in 1982. Quote, they showed it, and as a matter of fact, I think that was a huge mistake for them, because we were working on Dragon's Lair project, and at that point we realized that we were in a horse race and we had to be first, and we were.
They thought there was the only game in town.
Yeah.
Up until then.
Pretty much.
So they might not have pushed so hard to get Dragon's Lair out when they did, had they not known
that this thing was coming.
That there was a competitor that was showing their work in progress.
You know, it's funny, you talk about the maintenance issues. I keep thinking back to that Wild Gunman one with two reels of film being projected. That must have been a maintenance nightmare. That's all I kept going through my head is like, that thing must be have been broken like all the time.
Right.
So it was such a maintenance nightmare, and given the era that it was produced, there's actually only two known copies of the footage to exist. They're both on YouTube.
Wow.
One of them is like a really degraded thing that somebody captured that they were going to make as a commercial for the games. And somebody found that commercial footage and put it on YouTube. The other one is back in the early 2000s or late 90s. Somebody found the one working Wild Gunman machine known to exist, and they displayed it in a news. They displayed it in a news broadcast, and that video is on YouTube.
Oh, absolutely. For that. That's going to be interesting.
And we'll have all these links. Mo, I put all these links up there. You can add them all to the podcast the end so people can go watch them. But
absolutely,
it's really fascinating to look at some of this stuff.
I was thinking of that same logistic nightmare. It must be like owning a pinball machine because everything was physical, right? You had reels, you had bulbs, you had film, real film. And you, I mean, anyone who's ever in our day growing up and they wheeled in the projector, right? Somebody had to put the film on there, and it, when it got to the end, it went whap, 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 when it was done, you know, I just imagine the ends torn up. It was probably an endless reel or whatever, but it's just, it had to be a nightmare to maintain. And I wonder if any are still existent. I wonder if that one is probably
just that one, as far as I know.
Damn.
Okay.
I feel my education on on FMV games has really started to grow.
Yeah.
When we get back, we're going to learn more about the technology behind those FMV games. Stick around.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. the importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
It's showtime.
A major production.
Turn up the lights. We're taking a bow. It's our time to shine. Just look at us now.
Everett Mall is all new, with over 150 stores and Eat Street, Everett Mall's fabulous new food court. Play Spot the Stars to win a Hollywood vacation during Everett Mall's grand introduction, Saturday, May 21st.
A grand introduction.
I think like a lot of things that we grew up with, technology and technology changes must have driven this, right? I mean, must have made this, what made these things possible. Mm-hmm. So you have some stuff I know you're going to talk about, like what the technologies were that they used to create these games.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we finished up in the last segment talking about the reel to reel stuff from the 74 to 78 games produced by Nintendo and Sega. But we all know Laserdisc is the real driving force behind what became the real FMV video game movement. Laserdisc itself was actually developed, like I talked about earlier, by MCA and Philips in 1972 when it was demonstrated for the first time in public. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened with it after that. It was considered to be too expensive, too limited.
I remember
all these different problems. Not until 1977, when Ralph Baer wrote about the possibility of merging Laserdisc and arcade games in the journal IEEE Transactions and Consumer Electronics, did anybody really consider using that technology for video games? And it's a really good article. You should go read it if you get a chance. I think I have a link in the description. If not, we'll find it or something. But it was really fascinating. The Laserdisc first actually hit stores as a consumer product in 1978. You guys might remember, you know, they had movies on them and you had to take the thing in, slide it, lift the handle, then pull it out, flip it over. You know, you had to dance a jig and turn around in a circle or whatever to get your movie to play.
Do the hokey pokey.
Exactly.
I remember a friend of mine was into him because it's the only way he could get like manga was on Laserdiscs.
Right.
And they also, and Laserdiscs, they could hold something like, it was not much. It was like 40 minutes on the side.
40, 45 minutes? Like, yeah.
It was way too little.
You had to flip them or have multiple discs or something.
Because
you couldn't even put a whole movie on a side. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I know that there are some enthusiasts on our server over on Discord, genxgrownup.com/Discord, where they talk about having Laserdisc collections and they're very proud of them. And they swear by, you know, how clean the copies are and everything. It's supposed to be a great technology. It just never caught on. There was a competing technology in 1981 created by RCA called the CED video disc, which was a lot less expensive because, John, you'll love this, it was a vinyl disc that had grooves instead of a laser disc with the etchings.
What? I had actually heard of this because I watched Technology Connections, a great tech kind of consumer tech YouTube channel. And he has done a couple of videos on, it was video on vinyl. It was encoding it. I mean, it's just encoded stuff. They could take the bits and put it on vinyl. I could not believe, I'd never heard it before then.
Sounds crazy.
It's stupid. Dust on it. Everything that could cause a problem, things that lasers don't succumb to, vinyl does. Warping and all those things are easy to be bad, but it was looked surprisingly good. It wasn't quite as good as a laser disc, as I recall, but it was pretty cool.
Well, and to your point, the discs would not last, so it couldn't really be used in a commercial or even a consumer setting for very long.
Playing all day,
and people didn't want to pay the price for whatever the CED, even though it was cheaper than the Laserdisc. You still don't want to pay for something that's going to wear out after 20 or 30 uses, right? And that's kind of what would happen with these things. Now, later on, MCA, Magnavox, and Pioneer joined forces to create the Optical Programming Associates (OPA). They created some of the first interactive discs that were used as predecessors to these Laserdisc video games. Some of them were like the First National Kid Disc, which had a bunch of activities for kids. There was a murder mystery set where you could play like a Clue style murder mystery game. All kinds of little things like that. So think of your book and play records from back in the day that you love, John, but with this laser disc type of technology.
I'm starting to see like the genesis of like a Dragon's Lair in there, right? So individual tracks are, well, make a choice, do something. And you jump to whatever track is the result of your choice. That's kind of what the early, well, the early starting in the 80s games were that were,
right.
Yeah, we have every single scene, but we'll pick which scene to show you what, right. What the causes of your actions were. So I can see it all coming together.
Exactly. And that's the whole point. Like before this type of technology, the choice model, the only thing you could do with those old reel-to-reel dual projector things, and you're not going to put that in too many arcades and it lasts for very long because the film's going to break, like we talked about, the machine's going to break down. So you need something that's more durable, more reliable, especially as you're getting into the early 80s when kids are pounding on buttons and throwing joysticks left, right, and center. You need something that's a little bit more reliable. Now, we'll talk a little bit about LaserDisc reliability at some point because it wasn't as reliable as it could have been. The one thing that I know arcade owners talked about all the time back then was how those LaserDisc players, not the discs themselves, but the players would break down constantly.
Oh, wow.
And guess what? Cinematronics made them buy a new one.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was part of their model. It's kind of like the ice cream machines at McDonald's. Anyway.
Wow.
Sarge broke.
One of the other things that was first introduced with that racing game that we talked about for Dragon's Lair, dual monitors became kind of a big deal when it came to FMV arcade games because they were so new to the scene. This was before the crash or right after the crash, right in the crash, whenever it happened. But people were still big into arcades and crowds and crowds of people would want to watch this game.
Lines.
But only probably 5 to 10 people could watch over a shoulder at a time.
Right,
so you needed a monitor up high so that people could see what was going on the screen, try and figure out, you know, how things were playing. Because don't forget, when Dragon's Lair first hits, how much did it cost? 50 cents.
50 cents a throw.
And people were mad as hell about losing those quarters quick because they didn't know how to play the game.
Yeah, I remember it being a dollar in New York.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
That's ridiculous.
Maybe like a dollar and then 50 to continue or something.
Something like that.
It was expensive. Like, I never played it much. That's why I didn't get any good at it.
Hell. Yeah.
It costs so much.
You can afford it.
I got to think having that second monitor paid for itself pretty quickly because the more attention that thing could draw, you put it in the front of the arcade so people can see it from walking through the mall.
Yep.
And the more people see it, the more people go, what the hell is that? That's not Pac-Man. Holy crap. That's a cartoon they're playing.
By the way, New Wave Toys, I'm still waiting for my dual monitor extension that you were supposed to release and hasn't come out yet.
I know.
I still want that for all my Dragon's Lair machines that I have. I think there's also one thing that we need to talk a little bit about when it comes to technology. There's two different styles of FM video games. There's the animated, and that's in the Dragon's Lair camp. But then there's also live action, which is probably most famously represented by Mad Dog McCree. That was another Western shooting game style of FM video where you had to fire at a specific moment to kill the guy in front of you. Animated was either super expensive to produce, like in Dragon's Lair's case, because you had, you know, 20, maybe 100 artists producing thousands upon thousands of cells that were put into the animation. Or, you know, maybe they were taking already existing movie clips and things and putting them together like Cliffhanger. But Mad Dog McCree was basically, they were just filming a movie for a day or two on a set somewhere. And then
chopping it up,
putting that over into the LaserDisc format and making the video game out of it. So I was kind of surprised that live action didn't take off and do more revenue than animated because of the complexity and expenses associated with the animated. But I think we all know when you think about LaserDisc games, you think of Dragon's Lair or Space Ace, Thayer's Quest long before you think of Mad Dog McCree.
Way before.
Yeah. It's I never looked down that angle of it, that how easy it would be to go, look, we're going to rent some gear for a day. You get some day actors, some go out
actors,
there.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Stand there and say these five different lines. We'll use them interchangeably throughout this thing and chop up the video and put them on tracks. And then all you have to write is a program to show which one you go to. Why are there 1,000 of those? Why didn't everybody do that?
Well, they did, but just not in the arcades. That became what we're going to talk about when it comes to home systems.
Okay.
Right. So it was interesting to me. I would have thought the arcades would have needed to be the cheaper route and the home stuff maybe could have been a little bit more expensive, but it was actually the reverse.
Interesting.
The one other thing to note, and this is directly related to that home market, that same guy, Rick Dyer, that we talked about earlier, who created AMS and was a president, and then it turned into RDI later. They actually created a whole system based on that technology in 1984 called the Halcyon. It was kind of named after the HAL robot from 2001, A Space Odyssey. But he was sure that he could enter the home market with this system that would replicate the success of his two very successful FMV arcade games. And, you know, Dragon's Lair and Space Ace, right? Well, they released it in 1984. It had the pack-in game of Thayer's Quest, which came to the arcade later. It had a voice module so that the game could speak, right? It had the keyboard, just like the arcade cabinet had. Price for a home in 1984, $2,100.
In 84?
In 84.
Ridiculous. For a video game console that plays one game. And maybe you could buy more. No wonder.
Is no surprise. Nobody bought it at the trade shows. Investors ended up pulling the funding, and RDI was forced into bankruptcy.
Oh, man. And all of this, like, they were just a little early. Like, we were right on the edge of digitizing videos. You don't need the disc or the laser thing. Now, you know, we mentioned in the last episode about how one of us got a new computer and had John DeLancey as the host when you boot on your computer. But even that digitized video, even in, what was that, 92 or something? It was probably 160 by 300 pixels or something. It was nothing.
It was very low
it
res.
It was horrible, but it circumvented all that specific bespoke equipment. And you could, it was just a genius idea that was a little too early for the technology.
Especially considering what were a large generation of home consoles built on. You think about the Xbox, you think about the Xbox 360, the PlayStations 2 through whatever. They're all based on CD format games, right? Which are just the smaller cousins of Laserdiscs. Which is what they were trying to build in 84. It couldn't take off, though, at those price points because they couldn't manufacture it cheap enough for a mom and a dad to buy it for their kid who wanted to play it.
Well, so, I just looked it up just, you know, $2,100 in today's money is over $6,000.
Even if you were super rich, that's an extravagance that you're just not going to invest in.
Nobody's buying a console for $6,000. Like, they don't want to buy a gaming PC for that much. They complain about that, let alone the console. So,
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
Dragon's Lair, a fantasy adventure where you become a valiant knight on a quest to rescue the fair princess from the clutches of an evil dragon. You control the actions of a daring adventurer finding his way through the castle of a dark wizard who has infested it with treacherous monsters and obstacles. In the mysterious caverns below the castle, your odyssey continues against the awesome forces that oppose your efforts to reach the dragon's lair. Lead on, adventurer. Your quest awaits.
We have run through the origin of these full motion video games and the evolution of the technology and how it ultimately did come to every platform, the benefit of digitized and the ability to store stuff. And we talked about some great ones in our era, like Dragon's Lair, Space Ace, Mad Dog McCree, Thayer's Quest, stuff like that. In this segment, I wanted to kind of do a roundtable and each of you pick, like, what was your favorite or most memorable FMV video game that you think of? I mean, Dragon's Lair is kind of like the one people think of, but what's your favorite? What about you, Mo? Do you have just one that really resonates with you?
Yeah, there was one I played. God, it came out in 2016, I think. It was called The Bunker. And it won some awards. It was more of a choose your own adventure with video, I guess I would kind of think of it as, you know, because you know, you do an action, it would show you the next video and you show them the mm-hmm. action. What really got me was the storyline behind it, because basically there's a nuclear war. Your mom mm-hmm. goes into a bunker, and that's the day you were born. You were born in the bunker on that day.
Okay.
And they show that. Then the next scene is that you're at your mom's bedside. She's dying. It's 30 years later.
Ooh.
And you're the only two people left.
Whoa.
Everyone else is gone. Like, there's nobody else left. It's just the two of you. And the way they built the story, I think, is really what got me on it, because as you go to like the different rooms, they give you another little piece of the history, you know, another little piece. And they did such a good job of just pulling you along. And then when you get the reveal, like, this is what happened, you're like, holy crap. It was very good. They said it came out a while ago. You probably get it today. God, you probably get it cheap today, I imagine.
Now, was this a live action or animated?
Yes, type live of action. Video? It was live action.
Was actors. There anybody, any actors in it you would recognize or became none. Anybody? Or just one of those? Yeah.
British accent people. That's all I know.
Those Brits, they're in everything.
Yeah.
They get all the good jobs.
It was really great. How about you, John? What was yours?
You know, I don't know if I would say my favorite, but certainly my most memorable. And when I think about full motion video games, the ones that resonated with me the most were the ones when they started to merge the two technologies, where, you know, like your Dragon's Lair type games, it's all video. In fact, even the screens that say insert another coin was a mm-hmm. clip on the laser disc. It wasn't even digitally created. Right. It was just coming out of the laser disc. But when they started to take full motion video and either overlay it with graphics, like an Area 51 arcade game kind of thing, or when they just interspersed it, like they used it as the cutscene rather than just doing a cutscene with, you know, a guy standing there who's digital going, hi, you need to do blah, 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 give your assignment. They started to do real actors to motivate you. And I think back to Wing Commander 3 and 4.
I remember those.
Prophecy.
Now, I didn't even have a PC I could play them on, but I knew people that did have PCs they could play them on. And when I visited their house, I would pester them, because it wasn't just randos like you're the bunker.
Yeah.
Mark Hamill was in those. Mm-hmm. Tom Wilson, who later became Biff Tannen, John Spencer. There were some, like, so they got real talent in there. So it wasn't just people going, you need to do the assignment. Like, it was people with acting chops.
Right.
And so then when they cut to the video game and you're just back in the digital pixel world, you are more invested, because that guy who's the squadron leader is the one that told me how important this is. And it put more weight on the game that otherwise would have just been, I mean, still Wing Commander is a fine series, but it gave it so much more meaningfulness to the missions and the game. And it really made me upset when I failed a mission. I'm like, oh, Luke Skywalker is going to be so pissed at me for doing that. And they would, of course, have cuts where there's one where you succeeded, one where you failed, and they had the different ones like that. But in large part, it was the motivational speeches. You know, it's time to rally the troops, and we're getting our mission briefing and everything. And it was somebody talking to me, a real guy with real acting chops. I loved those. I thought that was really cool. George, what about you? I probably could guess, but I'm not going to assume. What is your favorite?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough call, honestly. I mean, I kind of am forced to go with Dragon's Lair just because I've played it all the way through so many times. We've done videos about it here on the channel and on the podcast. We've talked about it. It's definitely my favorite.
Okay.
Another game, though, that's really near and dear to my heart that, unfortunately, I just haven't got as much of an opportunity to play because it was so hard to find the cabinets out in the wild, was Cliffhanger. I loved that game. It was another one of those timing games, just like Dragon's Lair and Space Ace and a few others.
Yep.
And it was just an over-the-top, you know, anime style of animation. And I was just mesmerized by it. The whole thing about how I found it in that sub-basement arcade in Atlanta, Georgia one time, you know, that I've probably told the story on here a couple of times. I just has all those memories. So I think the thing that's my favorite about Dragon's Lair and Cliffhanger is just, it was the first times that I could control a TV show or a movie. And that's what I've always loved. I'm big into movies, big into TV shows. To have control, direct control over the sequence of events in the story that you're watching is what makes these games so awesome to me. I don't care if it's Mad Dog McCree, I don't care if it's Wild Gunman, any of these games, Astron Belt, they're all awesome because they let me control basically realistic cartoon or full motion video in, you know, for a quarter or 50 cents or a dollar or whatever it was. It's just an awesome genre and format. And I love it even today.
Yeah. It's like, it's giving you control of something that you never felt you had any control over. It's almost like a dream, right? You have no control of your dreams, you know, but if you go in there and suddenly like, oh, I'm gonna make this happen and make this happen. It's just a very cool mm-hmm. feeling when you could do that.
And yeah. even in what I always perceived as limited control, like you couldn't literally make him take one step and stop kind of thing. You were just going right. to different tracks, but you did have direct impact on what would happen next. Mm-hmm. And you were able to drive the story in a way that you could never do with a cartoon or a movie before. Yeah, it's hard to overstate that. And it's also probably hard to explain it to someone that didn't live through the transition to know just yeah. how dramatically different it was to just a traditional pixely sprite-y video game thing. When we get back, one more segment, we're going to talk about the evolution of these cool games and their technology. Stick around.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
The Schuylkill Mall, we're better than ever for you.
The Schuylkill Mall is better than ever. No matter what you're shopping for, you'll be sure to find it. With over 90 plus stores, including Kmart, Hess's and Bon-Ton, Farmore, and more. Just a short drive for your one-stop shopping trip. It's better than ever at the Schuylkill Mall.
The Schuylkill Mall. We're better than ever. We're better than ever for you.
We were just talking about our favorite FMV games and really how the technology, you know, for the home console stuff just really was a genius idea that missed its timing.
Yeah.
The technology just wasn't really there. And to prove that point, FMV didn't stop with the arcades. It didn't stop with that technology. As things evolved, it became more and more prevalent in games, even up to today and continuing to evolve.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to go back and look. There's definitely a gap where you just have one or two oddball things coming out. Like in okay. the 90s, you've got yeah. your Wing Commander 3 and 4. You've got games like your Phantasmagoria 2, A Puzzle of the Flesh, which is yeah. another all-time cult classic as far as I'm yeah. concerned.
Oh, great.
So much so that there's even a YouTube channel of the guy who played the main character in it has yeah. his own YouTube channel now
oh,
talking
really?
About trying to redo
oh,
it.
It's a cult classic.
It's really
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then there were some other games, some that you might not think of as FMV getting them. Myst is listed as an FMV.
Huh.
I mean, didn't know it, but apparently
I guess,
it is.
Yeah.
I never really played Myst that lot, but it was a huge game
oh,
in
yeah.
the early 90s for sure. It was the PC game for a long time.
It was. Yeah. As I recall, though, it was closer to the animated type
yes,
because it
I
was pre-rendered graphics. It was computer mm-hmm. graphics.
Yeah.
But computer graphics, your computer couldn't make.
Right.
It was someone rendered it on a Cray supercomputer, digitized it, and then put mm-hmm. it on the CD. So it looked like it was beautiful because it looked like a Pixar movie
yeah.
back
exactly.
when it came out. That's why. But yeah, it's almost a hybrid of mm-hmm. of digital
yeah.
or cartoons or whatever. Yeah, it was a big deal, no doubt.
Now we have quite a gap in the development of FMV games. You would think, oh, the technology is getting better all the time. They'll just do more stuff. There's actually a good little gap of maybe 10 years or so. So yeah. from the 90s, like the mid 90s to the mid 2000s. And that's when you start seeing a resurgence. And we're kind of in a small little like renaissance of FMV games that
I
are
noticed.
Out there. Now it's all yeah. PC based or console based, but mostly PC. You're not going to have stuff coming out in arcades really for this because there aren't really arcades that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But some of the first ones, like one of the very first ones that was wildly popular, won a lot of awards, was called Her Story. I don't know if mm-hmm. you guys remember this one, but it's like police detectives interviewing a series of people and you have to figure out what happened in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I picked up on during this podcast and talked about it several years ago called Late Shift, which was one of those choose your own adventure
yep.
kind of things. And it was, again, a British product. There's a lot of these that are produced in Great Britain. I was really shocked. Another one, which, it was okay. It was fun. I didn't like it as much, but a lot of people did. The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker.
I don't remember that one.
Too much of a title for me, but.
I don't remember that one.
It was okay. Then you got The Complex. Now, that was that was similar to one that you liked, Mo, the one you were talking about, Bunker. Complex mm-hmm. is another one that's got a really good story behind it and everything. I think the one that most people listening to this podcast might recognize, even though they might not recognize it as an FMV video game, is Bandersnatch, the Netflix thing from
people who did
the Mirror series. I mean, Bandersnatch is a great example of a modern FMV video game in a completely new format on Netflix.
Yeah. You don't need a console to play it. You just play it the way you watch your movie.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, one that occurred to me that it wasn't yet on the list and I realized, oh no, we're going to get emails about it. And one of the most notorious ones was called Night Trap.
Yeah. I left that one off. Game.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Did you? Was it because you wanted the emails?
Well, it's considered to be like the worst game of all time, like even worse than E.T. 2600.
Wow.
Like,
yes.
It is bad. It's awful.
It's the Plan 9 from Outer Space of full motion video games.
I don't know that it's that good.
Oh, wow.
It might not be. I've never played it. I've watched footage of it, though. It occurred to me that, oh, no, we didn't talk about Night Trap. I got to bring it up. Just so.
Yeah, no, you're right. We probably
How could
do.
You talk a whole an hour and not mention Night Trap? So there, we mentioned it. It's terrible. Next.
Well, speaking of next, John, this is one that honestly, I don't know how you haven't brought it up in a game segment on our regular podcast. It's an FMV video game that came out like 2 years ago, I think 2022 or near the end of that, or maybe 2023, called Not For Broadcast.
Oh, I have it. Yeah, I do have it.
Do you have it? Okay. Yes. I wondered, why didn't you talk about this? Because it's exactly what John used to do for a job, but in a video game. It's a television director who's putting his story up. But it's John's job gamified. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. You were basically a television technical director and you had video going on all these screens and it was up to you to switch between them to gamify it. I have it. I didn't play it a great deal because when I first started playing it, I went, this is just like the work I used to do. I enjoyed my work, but I don't know if I want it to be a game.
Right.
But it's funny. I've had probably half a dozen people that I've worked with over the years mention it to me or have you seen this game or whatever. Yes, I have seen that. But yeah, it was clever. It was a good usage. And as a capper to this episode, it's multiple FMV streams happening at once because they're all on the screens. They're all going on. So, you know, it's really the culmination of FMV games. It's FMV games about lots of FMV.
See, I thought you'd like to play that game so you could do all the stuff you wish you could do, you know, when you had the job. Oh. I'm sorry, cut this guy off, you know?
Yeah, shut up. Get off my TV. Oh, damn. Maybe I should go back and play it. I never thought of it as an FMV game because FMV has become so ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And everything, even if it's not video captured, it's so photorealistic these days that the line is blurred to such a degree.
Oh, for sure.
But man, evolutionary, revolutionary, and still continuing. Man, George, thank you for all of your research and Great digging job. All this stuff up. I've learned so much. Yeah.
I feel more knowledgeable now.
And yeah. Well, unavoidably, because I was pretty dumb coming into it. So you wouldn't have to do nearly as much work to educate us. But there are several you mentioned now that I want to go back and go, I want to see that. And plenty of links, of course. Mo, you got your work cut out for you. Got lots of links in here. I want to see all these footage from. I want to see the reel-to-reel. That one, just the gunfighter one sounds so fascinating.
And actually, John, see that you talked about on a show a few back, the Exodus. I bet you Wing Commander's on those.
Oh, some of them are. Yes, certainly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had
those crazy Star Trek games that had like a board game and a Klingon game, stuff like that.
Oh, that was a great game.
That was so much. We couldn't mention them all because it just became so universal.
Yeah.
So great. Whew. All right. Hey, that is going to wrap it up for this edition of the show. Thanks in no small part to George's research efforts. Before we wind this up, I once again want to thank another brand new Patreon supporter that has headed over to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp and generously put in a monthly pledge to help support what we do here over on YouTube and the website. Martin Lawrence, brand new patron, just signed up with us. Martin,
very cool.
Thank you so much and welcome. You probably know you're joining a roster of amazing and generous people that keep us on the air and on the YouTubes, allow us to continue. Thank you so much for it. If you want to join Martin, again, it's drop dead easy. Just head over to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp for as little as $1 a month. You can get on the list and support this podcast and more. We certainly would appreciate it. Now, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Gen X Grown Up Backtrack. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one, of course, but next week is the standard edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you we all appreciate most of all, though, and we can't wait to talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be
french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. George, nice glasses, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they're new.
He's about to tell us to fuck off. Here it comes. That's right.
I'm just saving my voice for all the talking I got to do now.
Oh, okay. All right. You'll tell us later. After you're done with the show, you can say
I'm sending right. my fuck off mentally.
Oh, I'm picking it up. Yeah.
Right, me too. I'm feeling it.
It's coming through strong. It's really projected well.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.